This episode is brought to you by VideoBlocks.com. Go to VideoBlocks.com/NotAlone to learn how to claim your exclusive offer for being a listener of the Not Alone podcast. We are also brought to you by the amazing support of our patrons over at Patreon.com/NotAlone podcast. Head over there to find out how you can get access to the show a few days early. You can get access to bonus episodes, all sorts of great rewards for supporting your favorite show. Again, that's Patreon.com/NotAlone podcast. Thank you so much to everyone who pledges to us each month and really helps us keep the lights on.
Ace Podcast.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Hello and welcome to the Not Alone podcast. I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso.
And today...
Sam.
Oh.
Hold on.
What?
Your voice sounds magnificent.
Right? I was just
going to
talk about
goodness.
It. We have our fancy new mics today. And I don't know if anybody...
That felt almost professional.
Right?
Ugh.
This is the industry standard microphone, is from what my research said. So I feel like I'm actually like a professional. And not just some guy who, like, bought mics off of people and like, had my brother get me a sweet deal on used equipment.
You mean like what we were last week?
Like we were last week, literally.
Right.
So, yeah, now we have professional microphones. These are the same microphones that Joe Rogan uses, but don't expect anything like that from us. It's also the microphone that Logic uses. Would you like to drop a few rhymes, as it were?
Sam. I can't rhyme.
That's fair.
I don't have musical talent.
We have no music in our soul.
I'm a visual artist, Sam.
I mean, I think that's being a little bit generous, don't you?
I think I'm going to slit your throat.
That's fair. All right. Hello, everyone. Anyway, so we got fancy new mics. So we're going to, nerd out about that all time during this time. So
I think I'm good now.
You think
I got
you're
it
good?
Out of my system.
I'm still.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm still excited. All right.
All right. Anyway, so anyway, where are we at?
We're back.
What
so
are we talking about?
Today, we have had a heck of a last 2 months, guys. Like, we did Skinwalker Ranch for 3 weeks, then we did the Black Monk, which was fun, but then we did Mothman for 2 weeks, then we did our massive 3-hour-long listener special. It has been a lot, and we have loved it, and we've enjoyed it, but we're gonna
speak for yourself.
That's true. Jason's been pretty upset with all of it, actually.
Oh, no. It's been fun. It's been a good ride so far.
But we are going to essentially scale it back a little bit and make a return to just some good, intriguing stories, but nothing that means that I have to spend 40 hours a week researching. So, not to say that we're never going to do anything like that again. I mean, we have a few different heavy hitters planned, not for any specific time, but things like Dyatlov Paz. Do you know The Mystery of Oak Island?
No, I read that. I was like, okay.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Roswell. We're going to talk about Edgar Casey. We're going to talk about Aleister Crowley. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff in the future that is going to cause us to spend a lot of time reading books. But today, we're just going to do a nice little story. Just a nice little story for you.
Nice little story of what, though? Good. Like, what we got?
One of the most anomalous events.
You mean fake?
I don't think it's fake, man. I don't. I think
right.
It's. I really believe this story a lot. The subject for tonight,
Sam. Let's be honest, real quick though.
Yeah,
you believe whatever's on the bottom of a Snapple? Like,
what the heck,
cap.
Jason? I'm a discerning person. I'm just saying. There has been some stuff that we've done that I haven't fully believed. High Brazil was one.
That was High Brazil was. It's an interesting.
It was
idea.
Interesting.
It's
it was a fun story.
Topic, yeah.
What else was it? I don't know. There were other ones.
But you're really into this one, huh?
This
really
one I'm
this
really
one?
Into, and all it right. Is the good old-fashioned cryptozoology, the story
Ooh.
Of the Dover Demon.
Okay.
Right?
All right. So we've got a nasty little devil playing around in Dover.
Nasty little devil. So the Dover demon is often mentioned in the same sentence, in the same paragraphs as things like Sasquatch, things like the Loch Ness Monster, but I just simply don't think it is that big. I think that the a good amount, maybe the majority of our
physically
listeners.
Physically, it's pretty
small, right? Physically, it's very small. Thank you, Jason.
Yes. Of course, Sam. I'm here with the heavy punches.
Thank you. I don't feel like it got as much worldwide recognition. You also have the idea that it really hasn't persisted.
And I have never heard You've of never it heard before of it. Last week.
That's a really good indicator of like how big something is. If it's big, Jason's heard of it. If it's not, he hasn't. And that's okay. That's all right. But the Dover demon was a creature that was witnessed on three separate occasions by four mostly unrelated witnesses in the small town of Dover, Massachusetts in 1977. Now, Dover had a population of about 5,000 people.
Okay.
It still has a population of around 5,000 people. Really not Weird. A lot of growth. Yeah, it's interesting. Almost like
Is
one
it
of those...
Just like a suburb or like...
It's like 15 miles away from Boston. I think.
So sort of?
Kind of. It's like one of those Stephen King towns.
Perfect.
Where it's like a small town. Nothing really changes that much.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something going on under the surface. It is. And
I'm feeling it. I like
Dover
it.
Dover is also one of the wealthiest areas in the state. Its median income today is $141,000. The nationwide median income is about $50,000. So they're pretty
really?
Well
That's
off. Mm-hmm. But their annual budget, 75% of it is allocated to snow removal. I don't know why we're talking about this. I just wanted to give some background on Dover.
Yeah, so I think you have fully established sleepy town.
Sleepy, rich town sleepy with a lot of snow.
Little town.
Yeah.
Got it.
So essentially what happened is that between April 21st and 22nd of 1977, the Dover demon would be spotted by four witnesses, all of whom were identified as family and friends identified by family, friends, and other townsfolk as completely trustworthy, and who, for the most part, were unaware of each other's sightings and experiences when they reported their own. Now, the reports were initially investigated by a team of Fortean and ufological researchers in the area. It was a team of four people, consisting of one Mr. Walter Webb, who is well known within the ufological community for being the first researcher to study and investigate the Betty and Barney Hill UFO abduction case, and he was cited by many.
When was that?
So that took place in 1961. So he was, like I said, well known by this time. And the Betty and Barney Hill UFO abduction case is cited by many as the first abduction event of the modern era. Now, next up on the team, we have Joseph Nyman of Medfield. He was a member of MUFON and an organization called APRO, which was the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, which is now defunct. We have also Ed Fox of Foxborough, who was a member... Ed Fogg, thank you, of Foxborough.
I love it.
He was a member of the New England UFO Study Group. And finally, most importantly, I would say, you have Lauren Coleman. Now, Lauren Coleman is a member, actually the assistant or visiting editor of the International Fortean Society. He was a published author even at this point, and a honorary member of the Society for the Investigation of the Unexplained.
Gotcha. So, in terms, he's the head honcho?
He's the big boy here.
The star, essentially?
Yes, and Coleman is the one who is still most tied to the Dover Demon case. He's the one who came up with the name, the Dover Demon. He is a very interesting individual.
I was really hoping for like another Jersey Devil-esque fail from the name. I feel like it just doesn't do it justice. I feel it's a little overselling.
I agree.
Okay.
Now, Coleman is the real deal when it comes to boots on the ground investigation. He's one of America's foremost cryptozoologists. It's hard to find a text on cryptozoology that he did not either help write or at least that he's mentioned in. He's in the Mothman prophecies a few times. He was close with John Keel. He is very well respected even among skeptics and is an authority in the field of cryptozoology. An editor of the Skeptical Inquirer once said of Coleman that among monster hunters, Lauren is one of the more reputable, but I'm not convinced that what cryptozoologists seek is actually out there. Which, I mean, if you're gonna be interacting with a cryptozoologist and you're a skeptic or on the other side of the aisle, I think that's probably the highest praise you could give someone. Like, I think you're looking for bunk. I think that I don't think you're gonna find anything, but I think you're a reputable guy. I think you're a trustworthy guy. So that's Coleman. He has written over.
I don't know. Don't like the guy.
What the heck?
I don't know. I just have a bad feeling about him.
What the heck? He is great. He's on Twitter. I actually reached.
He's best friends with Keel. I'm like, eh.
He's not best friends, but they know each other. And Keel is also well respected and a good guy.
And dead.
So yeah, don't speak ill of him. I actually, not like very extensively, but I actually tweeted at Lauren Coleman for some clarification about the case, and he tweeted back within like a minute or two.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's awesome, dude. He's a great guy.
I still don't understand the Twitters.
I can teach you. I honestly think we're at the point where you need to
can
be
you show
on
me the
Twitter.
World?
Yes.
Ah.
All right. Now, as of this episode, Lauren Coleman has written over 40 books on a variety of subjects, and is the most well-known these days as the curator of the International Cryptozoology Museum in Maine. It is one of the only, or it is the only museum of its kind, and one day Jason and I are going there.
You promise?
I promise. We also had a listener tell us that if we ever want to go to Wisconsin, he will pick us up from the airport and then drive us to Bray Road. So we have that going for us as well.
Sweet.
So
just drop us off at Bray Road.
There we go. And, now we just need a way to get there.
Never hear from us again.
Ever again, 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 again. Anyway, so we're going to go there one day.
Do
that's going to be awesome.
Camping on Bray Road?
Sure, man.
What if we get like one of those crazy awesome like tree...
Dude, I think you're overestimating
tents.
This. I think
How cool would that be?
I mean, there are trees from what I understand, but I don't think it's a whole lot of trees.
But I mean, like just high enough to where... Hopefully a humanoid wolf thing can't jump up.
I don't think it's gonna kill us, dude.
Why?
Because it hasn't ever killed anybody that we know of.
It's almost like it's not even there.
Well, I don't think that's true. Anyway, now Coleman is well known in another field as well, one that makes him a key part of this investigation of the Dover Demon. As we'll be getting into here, the Dover Demon, the witnesses of it, all had one other big thing in common. Beyond the town that they lived in, all of the witnesses were teenagers, and they all attended the same high school.
Ah, it's the hormones.
Dover Sherborne Regional High School. Thank you.
You're
the
welcome.
Hormones. The hormones made them hallucinate. Anyway, that's a stupid theory that people throw around still. Anyway, now the reason that this relates to Coleman is because in addition to his prominence in the field of Fortiana, Coleman, at that time, was a social worker who worked in high school environments with what was referred to at the time as the emotionally disturbed youths. Now, working in Maine, to this day, he has helped to train over 40,000 mental health professionals and has authored a handful of manuals. He is a published author in this field as well and has been called on for statements, particularly in the aftermath of school shootings, on how best to prevent these problems from occurring in the future. It seems to me that if there is one person in the entire world who is qualified to interview a group of teenagers about the sighting of a cryptid, it's Lauren Coleman. He is the dream team for this.
Yeah, I would definitely align with that. Yeah.
Now,
totally see that.
It's
okay.
Interesting.
So yeah, Coleman's on the ground.
Coleman's boots on the ground right as he gets there. He eventually did the investigating. To begin with, he talked to him about a week after the events took place. The rest of the team didn't get there until May 21st, so about a month later. But Coleman had stopped in at the Dover County store where an employee told him of what had transpired. And from there, he went forward, interviewed the witnesses, and we're going to get into what they saw right now. That is what? I thought you were going to do like the Twilight Zone.
I was going to, and I'm like, oh, wait, what about copyright and stuff?
I don't think you humming the Twilight Zone is going to get us. Here, I'll do it.
That's what's taking us down. Just like the phone and tax fraud. It's the same thing.
I think us making fun of Sean Manchester is going to get us taken down a lot faster.
Oh, Shawnee boy.
He's litigious. That's a word that I learned.
I love Manchester.
Mm-hmm. All right. So... The Dover Demon. The initial sighting of the Dover Demon was made on the evening of April 21st at about 10:30 p.m. The witness was a 17-year-old boy named William Bartlett, known to his friends and family as Bill, and he was cruising around Dover in his Volkswagen with his two friends, Mike Mazica, we're going to say it's that.
Oh, man, those crazy kids.
And Andy Brody.
Oh.
Now,
three kids in a Volkswagen just cruising.
Just cruising in the night. I actually did that same thing because I had a Volkswagen van growing up.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I would just go cruise around.
I'm trying to imagine what, like, young Sam looked like without long hair and a beard. I can't do
it. I still had the beard.
I picture literally you.
I've had this beard since eighth grade.
What?
Yeah. I've had this beard since middle school.
What, do you have a mustache when you were born?
Yeah.
Whoa.
So,
I love it.
Now, Bill states that the sky was clear and he could see the stars, which Lauren Coleman confirmed with the National Weather Service. The gang was driving north on Farm Street, going about 40 to 45 miles per hour, when Bill said that he spotted a low wall of loose stones that was about 2 feet high off to the left of him, and he saw what at first appeared to be a large cat or a dog creeping along it. Now, I should mention right off the bat, this road that he's on, it has long been a, and take this as you will, it has long been a place of mystical speculation and strange events in Dover's history. Back in, I believe it was the early 1900s or late 1800s, there was a farmer who saw what he said his satanic majesty.
Sam?
Riding a horse down this road.
This isn't fair. You are blindsiding me with this awesome information.
I know. I didn't put it in the notes. So this guy was just plowing his field, and he saw the devil himself. He didn't really say what he looked like. His literal words were, "I saw his satanic majesty."
Wow.
Riding down the road on a horse.
I wonder if he had a fiddle in hand going to Georgia.
It could be. So you have that. You also have these stories. It's a little harder to pin down the dates on where they came from. You have these stories of, like, treasure that's buried somewhere along this road in this area. So
this is an area known for kind of fanciful ideas and history, colorful history to it. Okay.
Yes, exactly. Right. Okay. So take that as you will. Now, suddenly, back in 1977, suddenly...
right, because we went in our go-backy machine.
We went way back.
Whoa.
And now we're back to the past.
We're back to the future? No.
No, we're back to the past.
Oh, okay.
Now, suddenly the high beams of this Volkswagen...
I could sell this iPad for so much.
I know. Millions.
What are we doing here recording, Sam?
All right. Okay. All right. Suddenly the high beams of the Volkswagen... They catch this dog or cat-like figure that Bill thinks he sees off to the left of him. And it floods it in light, and it was the strangest-looking thing that Bartlett had ever seen. And he wrote, "I swear on a stack of Bibles that this is what I saw." Now, it appeared to have long, spindly fingers grabbing onto the rock. It turned its head to stare directly into the car at Bartlett. Its head was unusually large and somewhat watermelon-shaped, and about as large as the body of the creature itself as well.
I kind of feel like it's more like peanut-shaped. When you look at it, like from his illustration, which we're going to talk about probably in a second here.
Yes, and this is what...
It's very weird.
Yeah, this is exactly what Bartlett said to Coleman.
Yeah, okay.
So these words... I do agree with you.
What?
It's never seen a peanut before. I do agree that it is, and that's how the next witness describes it too, is more of like a figure eight or a peanut shape. But Bartlett says its head is unusually large and watermelon shaped and about as large as the body of the creature itself. It had no hair, no mouth, no ears, and just eyes. And these eyes were extraordinarily large and apparently lidless. They shone brightly like two orange marbles. The eyes had not been shining previously, meaning that it was most likely a case of eye shine, as opposed to an entity like Mothman or even some reports of Bigfoot who say that the eyes glow from some internal source. Now, its head was supported by a very thin neck, and its arms and legs were also long and spindly. Its skin appeared to look rough, like that of a shark, and the creature's skin was an exaggerated peach color, described by Bartlett as, quote, like Fred Flintstone in the Sunday comics, unquote. Now, near its hands, the tint of its skin faded more to white. It stood at about 3.5 to 4 feet tall. Now, neither Mike nor Andy saw this creature when Bill asked them about it. They said, tell us, what did you see? He said, did you see that? He said, well, no, but what did you see? He describes exactly that to them. When Coleman is interviewing the boys, as he does so, and he interviews them separately, both of these boys state pretty much the exact same thing as what they were told by Bill, but they also say that Bill was frightened and terrified. He drove pretty much a whole mile after he told them. They were like, take us back. That sounds dope. Let's try to find this thing. He drove for a whole nother mile before he finally got the courage up to turn around. And when they turned back around, Mike and Andy basically like rolled down their windows and were like, hey, demon. Hey, demon. I don't know if they didn't say demon.
Yeah. Because that wasn't like, coined yet.
Hey, come back. Where you at?
That's the exact opposite of what you want to do to a lure.
Yeah,
creature.
I know. You really don't want to do that if you don't know what you're dealing with. But that's what they did. And Bill was like, shut up. Thankfully, nothing happened. They weren't able to see anything. The creature seemed to have vanished. I wouldn't say vanished. It had like 10 minutes to get out of there. But Bill was, and still is, an artistic individual. He was a member of Boston's Copley Art Society. And when he returned home, he sketched an image of what he saw. Now, Bill enjoyed sketching things that he saw in the natural world. In an interview with The Real Paper, he stated that because of... I know, what a freaking name for a paper. I'm like reading Lauren Coleman's...
The Real Paper.
Yeah, I'm reading Lauren Coleman's account of this.
This is the real paper. That's the false paper over there.
Well, I'm reading
That's
Coleman's
the
account of this.
Paper.
And I'm like, are you just trying to convince me that this is a real paper? What the heck is going on here?
That's hilarious.
In an interview with The Real Paper, he stated that because of his artistic leanings, he trains himself to remember what he sees. So he sketches this very interesting figure, which we'll be posting this in the blog post to this episode. So go over to itsnotalonepodcast.com/Dover. That's where this one's going to be. And it is, I mean, it's very good. I think it's a pretty good sketch. It's very scary, very spooky.
It's a little lackluster.
What the heck? It's a black and white sketch on a piece of notebook paper.
Yeah.
That some scared dude made.
Yeah.
All right. I will say...
I mean, it could be worse.
It could definitely be worse. I will say, Bill Bartlett, he did go on to become an artist. I think his website's like williambartlettfineart.com. He's pretty good. He's all right. I found his stuff.
All right.
It looks good. It's better than this. But he was also a child.
Amorphous is my only problem. Like, yeah. we don't, it's not a very high detail for someone that, you know, saw it in clear lighting. Well, at night, clear lighting, but still.
Right.
That's the only thing I have really against it.
But the thing about it is, I hear what you're saying there, but the thing to remember is he, from what he saw, right? And this is something that he didn't need hypnotherapy and regressions to remember or anything like that. This is something that he claims to have seen and seen by the light of the moon and the stars. There really wasn't that much detail. I mean, there was
hair.
There was
a general colorization, you know, a general body shape.
Yeah,
that's fair.
So I feel like with what he described, I feel like it's a pretty good representation.
All right.
Now, both of his parents stated that Bill was an honest kid. Here's the interesting thing about Bill Bartlett, and here's why I agree that he seems like an honest kid. He had no problem, apparently, no problem telling his parents, yeah, I'm gonna go smoke some weed, I'll be back whenever. Who does that? Who just tells their parents they're going out to smoke pot?
I don't know. That's a...
That's crazy!
That's a different level of family relationship there. That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
We here at, Not Alone Dad, Podcasts.
I know the war on drugs just began, but I'm going to go puff, puff, puff.
I don't think it just began.
Didn't it?
I don't think it began.
Wasn't
it, yet. It was Reagan. And
no,
Reagan
no, no,
was...
no, 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 no. It was Nixon.
No, 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 no. The war on drugs?
It hyphened again with Reagan, but it's
whatever.
With Nixon.
I'm not going to look into this. I believe you. Good. There we go. I believe you. I trust you on this.
All right.
One. Okay.
I just watched a video.
I like
about
how
it
you're like, all right. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. All right. I believe you. Anyway.
The war on drugs and how it actually murdered many people. So.
Yes. So we're not that podcast.
We're not.
That's, I mean, we, of course, here at Not Alone Podcast, we don't necessarily condone breaking laws and doing drugs and stuff and all that.
Why did you,
but,
why do you wrap me up in that?
I do. I hate you so much. I wrap you up in that for legal reasons.
Ah, okay. That's fair. You're looking out for me.
Right. But I do think that, like, the kind of relationship where you just straight up tell your parents, like, you're going to go out and do this, and they're totally, like, they're like, okay, so be it. You're a kid. Not much I can do about it. Like,
I don't know, parent them.
That's like a, well, yeah, you can still parent them, though. But I don't know. That's just a really weirdly open relationship.
So, yeah, Bill and his parents have a very, very open, communicative, trusting relationship with one another.
So
there we go. That's what we're getting
to. There we go. And it culminates in him being like, I'm going to go smoke some pot, Mom. And Mom's like, cool. So now they had no reason to believe that he was lying when he told them the story. They said that he seemed completely terrified and completely honest. Now, Bill's principal also vouched for him, as did the police chief of Dover, who was a man named Carl Sheridan, who stated that none of the witnesses had records, and so he could tell that they all seemed trustworthy, but he personally knew Bill and could vouch for his authenticity and for him being a good kid. Now, the investigators, it's pretty cool, they actually went out and they did recreation experiments. So they went and they put Bill back in his Volkswagen, had him drive around the corner at 45 miles an hour. Let's
confront the fear, yeah.
Well, I don't think it's that. I think it's more of like trying to get the actual data.
Right.
So like what they found is that Bill would have had between 5 and 6 seconds to witness the creature, but that during that time, the creature was only 20 feet away from him. So it was, I mean, it was pretty dang close. Now, we mentioned previously, again, a total of 4 individuals in 3 sightings who saw this creature with their own eyes. The next account takes place about 2 hours later, 1.2 miles from the corner of Farm Street where Bartlett had seen the creature initially. Now, sometime around midnight of April 22nd, John Baxter, aged 15, was leaving his girlfriend's house on Miller's Hill Road and began walking north, hoping to hitch a ride to get back to his house. Now, a half an hour later, John was about 0.95 miles up the road with no luck as to the hope of hitching a ride. What he saw next appeared to be a small person approaching him from about 100 feet away. Now, at this point, the clouds had moved in and he was unable to identify the figure. That's from his own account, and that Coleman checked that as well with the National Weather Service and the observatory and all that. It did get overcast around that time. Basically, Baxter thinks it's one of his buddies. He has a friend on the street named MG, which is an interesting name.
What's up, MG?
What's up, MG? He calls out to him. He says, hey, MG. MG, is that you? And the figure does not respond to him, does not say anything to him, just keeps walking towards him. And Baxter, for whatever reason, decides, okay, I'm just going to walk towards this guy because it's probably MG. They're walking towards each other until they're just about 25 feet away from each other. And the other individual stopped first, then Baxter stopped as well. Now, he calls out, now, who is that? Which I feel like is what he should have led with. But he calls out, now, who is that? And he steps towards it. And suddenly, this figure runs. It runs very quickly off to the left, down a gully, and up the opposite bank. Now, at this point, Baxter realizes that whatever it is, it does not appear to be human. Baxter pursues the creature for a few steps and then stops to observe it. By the measurements of the investigators, the figure was about 30 feet away from him at this point. And at this point, he sees that it is this creature, which is standing in slightly better light, to the point where Baxter could see a fair amount of detail as to the shape. Now, it was standing atop a rock, a few feet away from a tree. It was leaning towards the tree, gripping it for support, and Baxter stated that its toes and its feet appear to have molded around the rock. It perfectly molded. He said that the rock was lighter, it was a lighter rock, and that the toes were darker, and that's how he could tell that it just seemed perfectly surrounding it. Now, this is also where, like Jason mentioned earlier, in this one, the head does not seem as much like a watermelon or a smooth oval. It seems more like a peanut, and Baxter refers to it as a large figure-eight-shaped head. Now, he could see light reflecting off of the eyes. The light was orangish, but it was not the huge, like, two glowing marbles, like Bartlett said. It was just...
And it's probably because you have lack of light actually entering and reflecting. Yes. So it's probably just based off of that.
Yeah, just the ambient light around it instead of headlights.
Exactly.
Now, Baxter states that he knew that this thing was staring at him. This spooks me. I don't know why, but it's the same thing. Like, I have, for the last few nights, as I've gotten up to get water or go to the bathroom or whatever at 2 a.m., I have this sliding glass door that Jason's sitting in front of right now. It goes out to my patio. For some reason, we always leave the curtains open, although we should really close it. Typically, every single night when I go to get whatever, I get really scared about seeing a wolfman out there.
One of these days, I'm going to stand out there with a mask.
I have a sword cane, and I will beat you to death with it if it comes to it. So I do. I come out, and I like try my best to avoid it, and then I always look there no matter what. And then, of course, there's never a wolfman, but I'm always scared. And the last few nights, it's been the same thing, but it's been the Dover Demon, and it's just because of this staring. It's just this idea that whatever it is, it's like it's looking at you. It's acknowledging you. You don't know what it is. It just sends a shiver down my spine.
It's essentially sizing him up. It's now that he's at a safe distance, he's able to look back and reassess the situation. To fight or flight, you know?
Yeah.
That's what they're doing.
Fight.
And it's going off of what they're seeing you do.
Fight.
If you're chasing them, well, then they're probably going to run away. Otherwise, if you're not chasing them, if you're just standing it off, it's probably just going to, like, wander away normally. Like, okay.
So then what's the
danger has subsided.
So you just went through two scenarios.
Where they walk away.
What's the scenario where they fight you?
This thing would not fight you.
This thing, you don't think it would fight you?
No.
It doesn't seem built for
it. It's really, really not.
Yeah.
And don't worry, I'll break down its body structure in a moment for us.
So Baxter says it's staring at him. He can feel it staring at him. He stares back at it, and they lock eyes for a matter of minutes. Now, Baxter then begins to feel...
That is one staring contest.
I know, right? Baxter, especially because this guy doesn't have eyelids,
yeah,
remember?
Yeah, you're going to lose.
You're going to lose. Baxter begins... He says, I began to feel nervous. Well, I think you began to feel nervous a long time ago. I think he began to feel more nervous because he really started to understand he doesn't really know what he's looking at. It's like a slow but steady realization of... This is not
this is a
normal
thing.
And from there, we don't know. Is it hostile? Is it, he said that it looked like it might be getting ready to spring at him.
Okay.
Yep. So he just starts walking backwards, step by step by step by step. He keeps his eyes focused on the thing until he feels safe to turn around and run as fast as he can. He's then almost immediately picked up by a couple who picked him up and dropped him at home. When he got home, he, just like Bartlett, also sketched the creature. And we'll link to this in the show notes as well. These are two very famous sketches, Bartlett's and Baxter's.
And they are perfect.
They are perfect. Wait, they aren't or they are?
They are.
They are.
They are the exact same thing.
Yeah, and they are exactly what is described as well. Like with Baxter's drawing, as you'll see, I encourage you to right now, take a second, again, notalonepodcast.com/Dover, It's all, they're going to be there. Open it up.
Moments like this that I wish we were on YouTube.
I know.
She's like, it looks like this.
Jason is hoping.
There we go.
Jason is hoping that we transition, not obviously not getting rid of the podcast,
like
still having the audio, but also have a more visual component as well. If you think this is a good idea, let us know. We'll figure it out. But anyway, so take a look. You can see very clearly this silhouette. It's exactly as Baxter describes. Because he doesn't have the same amount of light, he doesn't see the skin, he doesn't really see the features. He just sees this silhouette with a huge head, hands gripping a tree, feet molding to rocks, like he said, which is another one of the weirdest things. It's just like, the feet almost have no definitive structure. And if you look back at Bartlett's drawing, it's very similar, although Bartlett himself really didn't come out and say that.
They remind me a lot of like geckos. Like their Ooh. Toes seem flexible enough that they to form the grip that they just wrap around everything. That's what they kind of
feel like. Is that how geckos work? Like.
Well, no, geckos, they're essentially their toe pads. This is going to be a very short tangent, I promise.
That's
their
fine,
toe
dude.
Pads are essentially, the way that it's designed is that their scales have become like little tiny fibers almost like hair. So it's like a filament almost. But with tons of split ends, they create endless amounts of surface area to get into nook and crannies of texture.
Okay.
That's why they can even move up what we, as we feel like a smooth wall, they're able to actually still have the grip in order to hold on and move up stuff.
Okay.
Same thing with spiders. Essentially. Yeah, essentially. They have little tiny hooks on their toes that allow them to grip onto stuff.
See, that's pretty intense stuff.
It's sweet. It's cool.
It is pretty great. And it does, I mean, so in theory, if this is what's actually being seen, this guy could probably like walk up walls, or at least try to.
Yeah.
Nice.
Depends on how actually heavy its head is the problem.
Well, that is the big thing. And of course, we're going to get into this at the end, but its head is very strange.
It's
very strange indeed. Now, here, with Baxter here, and this kind of rubs me the wrong way about everybody. Both
what? What do you mean?
Coleman, all of the investigators, Baxter's parents, everyone's like, well, here's the problem. He's a sci-fi fan. And it's like, what the heck does
love
that matter?
Sci-fi.
Yeah, seriously. And it's like, well, he likes to write his own little sci-fi stories. It's like, okay, that doesn't mean that him seeing something within 2 hours, within 2 miles, that somebody else saw that matches it pretty dang well. That's crap, in my opinion.
Quantum entanglement.
Quantum entanglement.
Yeah.
That's really going to piss off Christopher Cogswell that you just said that.
I don't quite understand it, so that's why
that's okay. So that's pretty much the definition of the word quantum. If you don't understand something,
it's really,
just
really
say
small.
Quantum.
It's
yes.
really, really
quantum
small.
Quantum physics, quantum mechanics, quantum entanglement.
It's all the science of little stuff.
Let's do this here.
Maybe
just to
force.
We're going to do this just to really piss off Cogs. It's all entropy, man.
No, it's not. it's like the exact opposite of entropy.
He really, really.
It's the
he really hates it when people
that,
talk
like,
about entropy.
Really, really small stuff together.
All right,
entropy,
now
like,
then.
Is
I appreciate
the
you.
Spreading of material.
Okay,
it's right. it's like a sandcastle
no,
in the
man.
Desert. It eventually just wears away.
Order
and becomes chaotic.
Order going into disorder.
Exactly.
You can't fight the entropy, man. That's all life is, man.
I'm gonna hurt you.
Life is chaos, man. Anyway, here's Wonderwall. Maybe. So I just think that's a big load of crap. The fact that this guy likes sci-fi, and so it apparently like makes his sighting less credible. Now, at no point did anyone ever completely throw out his sighting, but it's always kind of talk like, oh, well, Baxter. So
that's too bad.
Yeah. Now, but the thing about it is Baxter didn't have a problem admitting that to the investigators. He didn't try to cover it up. He didn't try to, because he didn't, I would say that most likely in his mind, he didn't make the connection that, oh, just because I read sci-fi, it means I must have made this up. Like, it's a little crappy. Anyway, Alice W. Stewart, and let me say, I guess the investigators probably had some other good things about Baxter, and we'll get into a little bit of that at the end, but anyway. Alice W. Stewart, who owned the home nearest to Baxter's sighting, stated that she hadn't seen or heard anything that evening. Her dogs had been inside the house, unable to alert her to anything outside. She doesn't really say whether or not she was up at 12:30 at night, which is not a typical time for people to be awake, so maybe she just was asleep. But now, Baxter and Bartlett claimed that while they knew each other, they didn't know each other very well. And everybody who's ever been to high school knows this. I mean, you have your clique, that clique, and sometimes there's like little, you know, crossover, I guess. And it was just that sort of thing where it's like, oh, I know that person, but I don't actually know him. Just like anytime my wife or my roommate, who we all three of us went to the same high school, anytime they talk about pretty much anybody at high school, I'm like, oh, that name sounds familiar, but I don't know. I can remember like 20 people from high school, if even that. Oh, man. I hate high school. I hate it. How was high school for you?
It's fine.
It's fine. All right.
Nothing special.
All right. Were you happy?
Yeah, moderately.
All right. All right, good. Okay. High school sucks. There's that. So,
all right.
Now, they didn't even know of each other's sightings until about 5 days after the events, when Baxter showed Bartlett his sketch of the entity, and Bartlett flipped out due to the similarities of what he saw. Now, there apparently was no communication between Bartlett and Baxter. Bill Bartlett, though, he did tell one of his friends of the experience of his experience, and that friend was William Tainter, another classmate of his. And we're going to get forward with the story here in just a moment, but we are going to take a brief break for our sponsors. Now, you've heard me talking about Videoblocks.com for a few weeks now, but they have outdone themselves again and come out with a brand new offer for the listeners of the Not Alone podcast, valid for this holiday season only. Now, for the same price that you'd pay to access Videoblocks' huge library of stock video footage, you now get access to all three of the Storyblocks media libraries. Now, that's right, for just $149, you can get access, all the access to your heart's content of not only video, but also stock audio and still image content, all included in that one price of your subscription, essentially tripling the value of your Storyblocks subscription. You're going to be able to get literally hundreds of thousands of images, audio, and video clips, all included with the price of that subscription, as well as huge discounts on any premium clips, anything out of their creator libraries. And you can feel good about it because anything that you do end up paying for, that money goes right into the pocket of the creator themselves. Using the Storyblocks.com media libraries, there is no reason that your production has to look anything less than the absolute best it can. Everything from B-roll footage to entire sound theme scores for your production are all available under this amazing deal at this amazing price. But it's only good through the holiday season, only good through December. So make sure you jump over as soon as you can, as soon as you hear this message, just open it up on your smartphone, tablet, desktop, laptop, Apple Watch, I don't care. Just go to videoblocks.com/notalone. That's videoblocks.com/notalone. I guarantee it's not only worth your time, it's worth your money, and it is going to take your production from being a amateur labor of love, well-intentioned, but definitely a hobby, and make it into something that can compete and stand out from the crowd of other independent content creators out there. So head on over. Again, that's videoblocks.com/notalone. I guarantee it's worth it. All right, let's get back to the show. Near midnight on the 22nd, midnight turning into the 23rd, right around 24 hours after Bartlett's initial sighting, about 22 hours after Baxter's sighting, William Tainter and a girl named Abby Brabham, aged 15, were driving to Abby's home in Sherburne. Now, they were about a quarter of a mile, or about 0.4 kilometers, from the city center. Now, the area they found themselves in was about 1.2 miles northeast of Baxter's sighting and about 2.3 to 2.4 miles northeast of Bartlett's sighting. Abby said that she saw something off to the left of the car. It appeared to be crouching on all fours facing the car, with a long body, no hair, tan or beige in color, no mouth, nose, ears, or tail. The face seemed lighter around the eyes, which according to Abby were not the orange that Bartlett and Baxter had reported, but rather a greenish hue. Now, Tainter himself didn't get a good look at the thing, but he confirmed the basics. Basically long body, big head, tannish coloring. He didn't know what it was, but he was sure it wasn't a dog, even though Abby said, oh, well, he was sure it wasn't a dog. Mm-hmm. Abby also said it was definitely not a dog, but it was about the size of a German Shepherd. And neither one of them got a good look at the creature's feet or hands. Now, essentially, this is interesting because, again, Tainter did know. He did hear about Bill Bartlett's experience. According to Tainter and Brabham, they didn't talk about this experience at all. They didn't mention it. It was just one of those things like, oh, that's, you
that
know,
weird
his
sci-fi
friend.
Kid.
Well,
saw something one night.
Bartlett, the first, the more reputable, the one who doesn't care about sci-fi.
I got them mixed up already.
That's okay. Wonderful. Yeah, they both have B's. That's intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that was just something that, you know, Will and Bill were good friends, and so they talked about it, but Abby really had no need to know about it, no need to hear about it. But this is interesting. Not only, of course, does her description match pretty well with anything else, but I think, and the investigators also thought, that the fact that the individual, Will Tainter, who did hear about it and did have previous knowledge about it, the fact that he didn't try to embellish the story or didn't try to say, oh, I saw it too, and no, Abby was wrong, the eyes were bright orange, and it was watermelon-shaped head and all that. He just said, like, oh, I just saw something. You know, and it matches the bare minimum. That's one thing that Coleman points at as being one of the more credible parts of the entire affair, is that even when they're both teenagers, they seem to be telling the truth. They weren't trying to over-exaggerate. Now, another interesting detail is that Abby, in her claim, she said that she must have observed the creature for about 30 to 45 seconds. Will stated that he saw it for just a few seconds, and during the timed reenactments, the team found that Abby could not have seen the Dover Demon for more than 5 seconds. Now, this is interesting to me, because if Abby is being truthful, she was unknowingly demonstrating the well-known phenomena of time dilation. Now, time dilation, of course, occurs when our bodies are in some sort of a heightened state of agitation. You get a pump of adrenaline or something. You often hear it like, I saw the other car coming at me and suddenly time slowed down and I did a really sick wheelie and I busted out of the way.
What are you driving?
A bicycle.
Oh, you're just like, oh, sick wheelie time.
Come on. That's the sound you make when you do a wheelie.
Yeah.
You know, it's that standard thing like, oh, my heart started beating and time slowed down and I focused. You know, sometimes most of the time it's time going longer. Sometimes it's time going shorter. But the interesting thing about Abby's case is that she stated she had 45 seconds here. She experienced that time dilation, and because of that time dilation, she's able to describe an even greater level of detail than what would normally be possible, seeing something at night going 45 miles an hour for 3 seconds. Now, newer studies of time dilation have put forth an interesting theory, especially with this specific sighting, as to why and how it occurs. Of course, it has something to do with the adrenaline that's released by our bodies, but in other less life-threatening situations, it has to do with the brain simply kicking into overdrive. There's a neurosurgeon named David Eagleman who's done experiments on this, and he says that opposed to the brain experiencing time dilation in the moment and experiencing it as it's happening, he says that the brain really actually only experiences the time dilation in memory when looking back at the event. In the actual event, you actually only have it for 5 seconds or whatever. But
makes sense.
Because you have so much more detail, or in those cases of like almost getting hit by a car, because your body is reacting faster, your brain automatically says, oh, there's no way that was only 5 seconds. And so it takes it and it expands it in your memory. To me, this is something, the fact that that's what Abby describes, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but the fact that that's what Abby describes and that she is so adamant about the time that she saw it, it really states that her brain was doing something. Her brain was reacting to some sort of unknown stimulus that it felt the need to gather more information of than if it had just been a dog or a cat or something like that.
I think she just got, I mean, I honestly think that she witnessed something that she was completely unsure about, mm-hmm. something very bizarre, and that caused her to experience the dilation.
Yeah. And when that adrenaline kicks into the system.
But she doesn't actually give us more detail.
Well, she gives us a fair amount of detail.
We got an elongated body, color, right. Head shape, and green eyes.
And the no ears, the no mouth.
Right, which still matches exactly what we were beginning before.
Right, but it's something that you wouldn't expect. You know, if it was just another animal, she would have said, oh, it was, you know, it had a mouth. That's right. A pretty standard thing. So, and then because of that adrenaline going into her brain as well, she's going to have it's just going to make a better imprint in her memory. That's something that pretty much is well accepted at that sort of science-y. I don't know. I'm not a science guy, but I just read this article about this like 2 days ago.
Where's Bill Nye when you need him?
I don't know. He's out there. He's out there somewhere being a Bill. I just read this article like 2 days ago, and then I read this account and I was like, holy crap, that's crazy.
That's cool.
But yeah, and now this as well, Abby's sighting was one of the more credible in the investigators' accounts. They really looked and said, okay, so William Bartlett and Abby Brabham, those are the two most credible. And then on the secondary level, you still have Will Tainter, who is more credible, and then Baxter, who just because he likes Star Trek, can't be trusted. I'm sure I'm taking Trekkies, that too personally.
You can't trust the Trekkies. Come on.
Right? Now, like we mentioned, Will claimed that he did not tell Abby about Bill's sighting until after this experience.
Right.
Will intentionally, he states, he intentionally asked incorrect leading questions of Abby.
Smart kid.
To try to get her to like say something, you know, like he's like, oh yeah, and it was bright pink in color, right? And she was like, no, it was beige. Are you sure it wasn't bright pink? No, it was, I don't know.
Bright pink, come now, on.
I'm sure that's not what he actually said.
Bright pink. But just like that. That's how they sound in Dover.
Exactly. In Massachusetts. I don't know.
Man, Sam.
All I know is that I'm not a cop. That's not even it. That's a terrible. How do you do it?
What do you mean?
How do you do the Boston accent about cop?
I don't know.
Cop. I don't know. I'm sorry, Boston people.
You're horrible.
I'm awful.
Get out of here.
Now, he's asking these misleading leading questions, and Abby is like, no, that's not what happened. This is what I saw, this and this, to the point where it was just matching too well with Bill Bartlett's.
Right. He wanted to make sure that there was not going to be any suggestive
exactly
information that she'll run with.
Yeah, and then he basically is like, well, crap, all right, here's what Bill Bartlett saw. Is this what you saw? And she was like, oh, crap, yeah. So she also, not only did Will not tell her about Bill Bartlett's sightings, she had no idea. She hadn't heard anything from anyone. Now, all four of the witnesses would go on to be interviewed separately by the investigators. All four of the investigators... Conversely, all four of the investigators agreed on the authenticity of the witnesses, even Baxter, and the fact that they at least all believed what they were telling the investigators. Now, in his book, Mysterious America, Coleman states that they were, like I said, especially impressed by Bill Bartlett and Abby Brabham, who both gave large amount of details, never changed their story, and seemed pretty dang trustworthy. According to Coleman, the entire town had nothing but good things to say about Bartlett. Like we said earlier, the police chief said he was a stand-up guy. Friends and family, they had nothing but good things to say about him. They even interviewed his teachers. Now, the interesting thing is, every single teacher that they talked to said that Bill Bartlett was a good kid. That Bill Bartlett was trustworthy and honest and a stand-up guy.
Okay. I get it. These four individuals...
No. I'm getting
are
here.
Are trustworthy.
I'm getting here.
Okay.
But there was one teacher.
Oh.
This is what I'm not just saying the same thing over and over and over and over. Maybe.
You kind of are.
I'll find it in post. But...
Yeah.
There was one teacher who said, that Bill Bartlett... well, I don't know how they talk in Massachusetts, so I'm just going to guess.
Just don't guess. See, there's the thing. If you don't know how they talk, then don't pretend like you do.
Well, that Bill Bartlett.
Gosh darn it, Sam.
That Bill Bartlett, he's a bad kid.
Forrest Gump?
He likes to cut classes.
Oh,
and
man.
And he likes to hang out in the smoking lounge. That's a pretty good Forrest Gump. Yeah. So...
Because everyone from Boston sounds like Forrest Gump.
I'm sorry. I'm sure that they don't. Anyway, he's a bad kid. He hangs out in the smoking lounge, which apparently students used to have smoking lounges, which is so cool. Smoking's not cool.
Dim lighting.
Smoking is not cool. Don't do it.
Speakeasy style.
Right?
Yeah. That's what I imagine.
He used to cut classes. Him and Baxter were the closest of friends, the thickest of thieves. If there was anyone who was going to pull a stunt like this, I would put money down on Bill Bartlett. So they go to Bill, and they're like, hey, man, what the heck?
Are you actually that kid?
Yeah, they're like,
you're skipping class,
They're Bill? Like, listen here, okay? Everybody had nice things to say about you, but this one person is coming up with some really specific complaints, and he basically goes back and, like, essentially debunks or whatever, refutes all of them, you know, saying, well, the smoking lounge is just where kids meet up at school. They meet up there, and then they go from there. I never cut class. I mean, I've cut class once or twice, but who hasn't? I think of myself as a good kid. And
I never cut class. Well, I've cut class once or twice.
Who hasn't? Seriously. And you know, me and Baxter, we did not know each other. And so then they went back to this other teacher, and this other teacher was like, well, I don't have any evidence for all of this, but I just think he's a terrible kid. And they're like, okay, so we're good. That's the one person who had something bad to say.
And... okay, so what does that bring to our story?
I'm just saying.
What's the significance of this?
I'm just giving you the narrative.
All right.
Giving you the narrative,
he
man.
He had one teacher that did not like him.
One teacher didn't like him. And that teacher, the point is that even this teacher had no way, no real way to defame him and no real evidence.
Okay, all
even
right.
when
now
looking
I get
for it.
It.
God, now, I don't need to be sitting here explaining I'm saying what I'm saying.
You're backing up the truthfulness again.
Exactly.
All right.
Now, to me, some of the more convincing stuff in this case is the little stuff. Beyond that description of how trustworthy they are, which I'm not going to get into again because apparently it's all I've said for an hour. Beyond the description of how trustworthy they were said to be, you also have just this grab bag of other people that helped to strengthen the stories of the witnesses. Bartlett's friends describing him as being terrified. Bartlett's parents describing him as being terrified. Even before he told them the story or showed them the picture, they said they noticed he was visually upset. Another thing about it is, even though everyone says they're good and trustworthy, basically the principal, in addition to saying that, he says, but really at the end of the day, they're just normal kids, you know? They're not... you know, if literally everyone was like, every single person here is a saint, it'd be a little fishy. It'd be a little bit like a Stephen King book.
Yeah, it's a cult.
It's a cult.
There's something going on with the town.
If everyone said, oh, they're a saint, it's one thing. If everyone says, oh, they're terrible, it's another thing. But if they're just average kids, for the most part, I mean, normal kids just aren't going to even... with the fact that allegedly no one talked to each other, no connection, you're just not going to have this sort of a thing happen. I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
I was a kid once. I don't really remember it very well. Now, the other big thing about the demon was, as far as I can tell, it really hasn't been seen again.
Okay.
You know,
so it was a certain event.
Yes, it was a one-hit wonder. You know, it's not like the Beast of Bray Road. It's not like Mothman, where people started hoaxing it and dressing up and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. It didn't take the town by storm and lead to people posing with pictures of statues. It was just something that happened, you know?
Yeah.
To me, I don't know.
Is it more credible to you because of that?
It is. Yeah. And it's like a terrible, like, double standard. Because honestly, if there were still cases to this day, I'd say, oh, well, it's still out there. But I will say that of the two options, I do find it more credible for it to pop up out of nowhere and disappear out of nowhere, as opposed to, because you do have one other person who stated that they saw it like 5 years previous in a totally different area.
Okay.
There's really not a lot of information from it because it's not a super credible situation. Basically, a woman said, like, yeah, me and my sister saw that there demon one time. And everyone was like, okay, tell us about it. And she was like, watermelon head and Flintstone skin. And they're like, that's just what Bill Bartlett said. Something's not adding up here. So it's just one of those isolated incidents that does. It makes it more credible for me. Now, the creature does share a few visual similarities with the Greys, but there was no UFO activity reported in the area during this time, and none of the witnesses either ascribed it to being extraterrestrial. They all believe that as weird as it was definitely something of this Earth.
Because teenagers definitely know what an ET looks like.
Well, it's 1977. Aliens are big stuff. People are going to know about the Greys.
Hollywood aliens are big stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, even with the Hollywood aliens, the Dover Demon does kind of match that. Like, okay. It's got the big head, it's got the spindly body. But no one was like, oh, it's an alien. They just didn't feel that way.
Okay.
They all believe that as weird as it was something from Earth. The other big little detail that sells it for me is that the sightings all took place in a relatively straight line from each other. And in a believable distance as well.
Yeah, an unbelievable pattern.
Yeah.
That's fair.
It seems like the way that a animal would move would be just in a straight line, you know? I mean, from here, it did pick up a little bit of national traction. It did, like, people heard about it. People still talk about it to this day, obviously. That's why we're here. Bartlett, you know, Coleman talks a little bit about how it just wasn't super great for the kids, too. You know, Abby said, I saw that creature and I don't care what happens. Like, she kind of knew that it wasn't going to be the best thing for her.
Right.
Bartlett, he seemed to do okay. He got a little bit weird about it. He said, like, for a time, apparently Coleman makes allusions to Bartlett saying something along the lines of, like, I can communicate with animals now. But not like full communication.
Love it.
And it was
from that death stare, man.
Yeah.
So and it got it.
It was just for.
He was literally transforming his mind so he could communicate with animals.
It was just for a short period. Baxter seemed to do pretty poorly under the spotlight. And it was said that later he acted out. He, like, broke some windows and stuff like that and just didn't handle it well. Coleman says that one of the worst things about this, and again, disturbed youths are his wheelhouse. He says that the bigger problem, more than just the physical exhaustion of basically a straight month of every day telling the story over and over again, sometimes it's on worldwide news.
Notoriety about it.
It's the long-term notoriety, and it's the fact that people want an explanation. They say, why do you think this thing was here? What do you think it was? What do you think it was doing? What does it want? And they're like, I don't know. I'm a kid. I should be worrying about going to prom. I shouldn't be worrying about this unknown demon that now has marked me for life, you know? And thankfully everybody settled down. Okay. It seems like I said, Bill Bartlett, Bartlett seems to do okay. He's a real bona fide artist. Stuff's not bad. I didn't really find anything else on the rest of them. You know, so be it. But they all, Coleman seems to imply that everything turned out okay in the end. I can't even imagine being a kid and then suddenly, like, everybody wants to talk to me about this thing that happened. And it's got to be stressful. It's got to kill you. But so The Dover Demon. What do you think, Jason?
Experience.
I see this photo that you added.
I don't think it is anything of this world. I think it's otherworldly.
So let's start. Okay, so let's.
Yeah.
Do you think it's
Sam? You finally did it. I think this is an alien.
So one. Do you think that the kids saw what they said they saw?
I believe the kids are sincere.
Okay.
And I mean, I've used that plenty of times, and I still will. I believe that they're absolutely sincere in what they believe that they've seen.
Okay.
That being said, when I think a lot of crime TV shows and stuff like that, and yes, like if we are in, you know, court of law,
right?
Witness testimony is very, very useful,
right?
And a big deal. But witness testimony in the court of science, not so much.
We
still need better observation with things that cannot be fouled, like our eyesight, especially at night and traveling speeds and a whole bunch of other conditions. So I truly believe that they think they saw what they saw.
Okay.
But I don't truly think that this thing existed. At least it's not from Earth. Now,
Along here, Jason. Yeah. Do you think they saw an alien, or do you think they saw a monkey, I guess, by what you put in the notes?
So, what I put in the notes was a picture of the only terrestrial animal that I can think of from our world that it could kind of be, maybe, which is the slender loris. And it's a small primate.
We'll put this in the show notes.
It's a small primate, and the reason why that I am kind of leaning towards that is mainly because, of course, its eye shine is pretty darn red.
Right.
From there, its body kind of makes some sense. It's very, very long, spindly arms and legs, and it looks very weird.
I will say, it doesn't appear to have a mouth.
Right. It has very small facial features, and its ears, you could probably, if you squint, it looks like they kind of are a part of its head. If you squint, yep, there's a squinting. They're very rounded ears, what I'm saying. And this is probably, at that time, an animal not really showing up in textbooks.
Right.
So it's fair enough to say that they might not know exactly what this animal is, especially if it was at night. Now, it's not very big. It's a very small creature. Mm-hmm. But again, at night, it's tough to tell exact sizing. Problem is, it is nowhere near native to Boston.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the issue.
That entire... So, and I mean, even if I may.
Yeah, yeah, go for it.
I see. Okay. I mean, I guess I can see the hands. I can see the feet. Doesn't have a tail. Its arms are spindly.
Got big old eyes that don't look like they have eyelids.
Correct. But I will say, I'll give you all that. I will say that its head is nothing, like nothing even close.
Right, to the size that we are expecting.
The size, the shape.
The color of the body is not that bad, though. It's kind of a peachy gray, and it does become lighter around the hands and the feet and the face. So, anyway.
So, if it has to be something terrestrial, you think it's this?
If it's from this world, I feel like it might be that. Otherwise, from the description of the body.
Okay.
There is no way this thing would survive on Earth.
Yeah, especially the winter.
Especially the winter, yeah, which, I mean, we just came out of.
Yep.
It's in April, but it has, from description, no mouth.
Uh-huh.
We don't even know how this thing breathes, to be completely honest. From there, it has no defense whatsoever besides for running away.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily, it's, I guess, a little quick. Sort of.
Yeah.
But again, this would be a prime target for any coyote or anything like that to attack and eat and kill rather quickly, which is probably what happened to it if it was a loris.
Right.
It probably got eaten rather quickly if it was an escaped loris, because like you said, we are in a little bit upper end of a neighborhood.
Right.
So possibly that could be the take. And the other issue is just physically. I mean, this thing doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
With the head being as large as the body, and the neck does not have nearly enough size to support it. But the thing is, if it was actually like a real thing, the head would throw the weight off so bad that really it'd be balancing on its front two legs if it was trying to move.
Mm.
It's too heavy. It's too top heavy. So the question then becomes, is what is its head. Maybe it's really not that large. Maybe it has a crest.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, maybe.
That's fair.
Maybe. So it's tough to pin down exactly what it is, but nothing about it makes sense for Earth.
Okay.
Which is why...
So that's why you're
saying...
It makes
a little bit more sense that if maybe this evolved on a different planet, and maybe it was a pet along for the ride and got it loose. Because it has a very curious nature, as we also see.
Right, it does. It's checking stuff out.
So there's a couple different things that make it weird.
That's, like I mentioned earlier, that's one of the unsettling things for it. Usually, unknown creatures and stuff like that, or even known creatures, they run. They run from cars. They don't take very well to human contact. So one of the weirdest and creepiest things about this for me, like I said, is the fact that it just sits there and stares. Right? And so I think that does imply the curious nature. I will say that the monkey hypothesis is a hypothesis. It always kind of unravels at the same point, as Coleman points out. There really aren't any monkeys in Massachusetts,
right,
but
right, yeah.
Just like it could be an alien pet, it could be a normal person's illegal pet that they got somewhere and it got out, I guess.
Actually, I have no idea whether or not it's legal to own one of these.
I'm going to guess it's not.
I want one so bad.
Anyway, it could be.
Oh, and they're nocturnal.
Oh, yeah. That's a good part of it as well. The other thing on that is that the other suggestion by some guy who thinks what he thinks is that it's a baby moose.
So I heard about baby moose or baby calf theory, and that doesn't seem well-rounded.
It doesn't very well.
It's not very good.
No.
So
Coleman specifically attacks that in his book. And the book, by the way, is Mysterious America, which everyone should own. He talks about how not only is it just not the right, the moose, if it's a moose, wouldn't be the right size for the season that it's in. It's in the wrong area. It, like, nothing about that makes sense other than it's just one of those things where this guy who has decided already that it couldn't be anything like what they're saying, it has to be a moose. That's just what it just doesn't make sense. Same
now,
thing with the calf and the foals for baby horses. There are a lot of horses in that area.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But now nobody said, like, my horse is missing, which is a big deal.
Yeah, that would be. I mean, a horse can be quite expensive. Now, I did do a little bit of a thought process here.
Okay.
What would it take to make it a real creature?
Okay.
So, I've thought this out a bit.
Okay.
If the Dover Demon is a real creature and evolved here on Earth.
Okay.
I think it would be an amphibian.
Interesting that you say that.
The reason being, for multiple things here, is because... One thing, if it's a mammal, then it would have hair at this size.
Oh,
with the climate, with the area that we're in, it would have to have hair. So what would drive it to not have hair? Well, what drove the predecessors to whales to not have hair? Well, it was living in an aquatic environment. Hair is not good for that.
Yeah.
From there, its body structure also doesn't make a ton of sense again, and it still kind of doesn't. With the size of its head and the way that we describe their fingers, but it does feel very similar to that of a frog's. And if you do live an aquatic life, then that allows you to break some of the rules of living a terrestrial life, of having, say, a very large head on a body that doesn't look like it can support it or should be able to support it. So, I think it might have been an amphibian of sorts.
So, I'm so glad that you brought that up.
If it did come from this Earth and is exactly what is described.
In June of 2000.
Oh my God.
Mark,
I swear, I don't know any of this.
He doesn't. I intentionally didn't put this in the notes. I wasn't even going to really mention it. In June of 2000, an individual named Mark A. Hall published a essay in a magazine called Wonders, Volume 6, Number 2. The essay is called A Primer on Mermaids.
Oh.
He writes, and I quote...
not a mermaid.
He writes, and I quote, an example of a pygmy mer being is the so-called Dover Demon, which was seen in Massachusetts along the Charles River in 1977. It has similarities and somewhat differences with the gray mer being reported elsewhere. I'd like to learn more about that. There are traditions of such small water-dwelling creatures known to the American Indians across North America. So,
okay.
In addition all to right. that, you do have the idea of the Cree Indians, Cree Native Americans, who supposedly live relatively close to this region. They have their legend about the Managishi, who is a small person with round heads and no noses that live only for one person, which is to play jokes on travelers. The little creatures have long spidery arms.
It's a spiteful existence.
Yeah. Long spidery legs, arms with six-fingered hands, and live between rocks and rapids. That's from Sigur Olsen's Listening Point, Listening Point, published in 1958. Now, one of the things that the witnesses...
How did I accidentally just
support that? I know, right? One of the things that the witnesses did mention is that they do think that it had something to do with the water. Like Hall said, it was seen along what's known as the Charles River, and they just had this feeling, just like they had the same feeling that it was not extraterrestrial, they had the same feeling that it was something aquatic, something that had come out of the river and needed to get back in.
See, that also, it falls in line with, again, the description of its hands and toes. It sounds very frog-like.
Mm-hmm.
That,
it does.
Again, reptilian toes, they're very long. They mold around shapes and stuff. It's bittersweet. It's bittersweet.
That's fair. I think that's as good a guess as any, especially for the fact that it was never seen again. Well, if it's not really supposed to be out of the water anyway, you know, so
or
be
it's
it.
It's a wet, slender loris. Poor little thing.
Poor little thing. Little loris.
It's not used to the cold outside, Sam.
So that's a good theory. So at the end of the day, again, what do you really think they saw? Do you think they saw anything? Do you think it's mass hysteria again?
No, I don't think it's mass hysteria because
it doesn't
fit
mass hysteria.
No, we don't have the elements that that form mass hysteria.
Right.
I don't really know, man. To be honest, like that little thought experiment I had.
Yeah,
that's the only thing that I can justify something of this world being here,
right,
and matching that exact description. Now, I think they probably saw something that wasn't exactly that,
right?
But I mean,
subconscious exaggerations of features. And,
yeah, I mean, it happens accidentally,
right?
It's not something that, and again, it doesn't discredit the sincerity of their testimonies or anything like that,
right?
But, you know, again, conditions.
They're so trustworthy.
Exactly, they're so freaking trustworthy. These kids do not lie. But your perception does get altered during certain conditions. I don't care how bright or full the moon is. It's still tougher for a human eye to see at night than it is in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it could be a couple of different things meshing around to create the Dover Demon, to create the sightings that we have covered. But at the end of the day, I don't have a firm idea of what it is.
And that's okay. Honestly, Coleman says it two or three times in the book. He says, in fact, let me quote this here. The Dover Demon is a, this is a quote. The Dover Demon is a true enigma, an animate anomaly that has intersected the lives of four credible young people that lonely week in April 1977. He says elsewhere in here about how it is a frustrating phenomena. It doesn't fit into any of the boxes that we want to check, not fully. And it is something that simply cannot be fully classified and categorized. And I think that that's true. And fair. I think that's fair. Personally.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to hear your side after you actually heard mine. And
yeah,
you got a weird smile on your face after that.
No. I just, for me personally, I think first, okay. Whew. What are you doing? Are you singing?
In my head, yeah.
All right, okay. Personally, I choose to believe the witnesses. I choose to believe it because, of course, they're so trustworthy.
Of course.
And also just because I feel like kids get the shaft, man. Kids get shafted so often.
Anything that I learned about Stranger Things, no one believes the kid, and they should believe the kid.
I messaged Rob, and I was like, hey, man, Stranger Things 3 needs to be the Dover Demon. It's the perfect real life Stranger Things story. Like, it'd be perfect. Like, they'd have to play it up and like people would have to die, but whatever.
Yeah, and you'd have to actually make a story besides for
just sighting,
like
sighting.
4-5 second sightings.
Yeah. A grand total of 15 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's a little tough to stretch into a movie.
Yeah. So I do personally believe that they saw what they say they saw. I think that the little details, like Bartlett saying, I'm an artist, so I trained myself to remember. I remember in the little basic art classes I took in middle and high school, they said the same sort of thing. You really have to hone your attention to detail, that sort of thing.
It is so hard to remember everything that you see.
Oh, yeah, dude. I can't remember anything I see. I didn't do it.
No, right.
I can't remember anything.
But as someone that also...
An art guy.
Like...
Art guy Jason.
I mean, it's tough to train yourself like that. And I think it's really tough to say that you can do that when you get shocked and are under stress immediately.
Yeah, I hear you. I think I laid out pretty well why I believe what I believe, the time dilation, the artist, the everything.
Yeah,
I
think, like, again, it sounds like you truly 110% believe in their testimonies.
Yes, I do. Yeah. I believe that they saw what they say they saw.
So is it an alien? Is it a demon?
I don't think it's an alien. I don't think it's a demon. Coleman
is it an alien or an amphibian?
Coleman doesn't think it's a demon either. He just, it's a catchy name.
Yeah, it's a catchy name.
I think it was just a creature. I think it was just, so it's either going to be at this point a true unknown cryptid, right? Something that has never been observed before or since. Okay. Or right. It could be a vastly deformed natural creature or something. I mean, you know,
right.
Things get messed up.
I would lean stronger to that side because the issue with saying that we have this one incident with one cryptid, you don't have a population.
Right.
Like, you don't have a supporting population. You've never had a supporting population, really.
Right.
Even if, say, this creature went into hibernation for 20 years at a time.
Right.
Underground or something, you would still have a population.
You'd have
boom.
To, where you, did it come from?
Right.
Yeah, I understand. I do think that the fact that it was, like I said, they allot 75% of their town budget to snow removal. I told you it was going to tie in. The fact that that's how much money they're spending getting their roads clean kind of indicates that the winters are probably pretty brutal.
Right. And amphibian so, would hibernate that time.
Yes. Yeah. But I think that that also shows that it's most likely not some sort of just seriously deformed creature because I don't think it would survive
that's fair.
A harsh winter. I believe.
I mean, it doesn't have a mouth, so.
No. Yeah, that's the other thing. How does it eat? How does it breathe? How does it reproduce? How does it do anything? We're never going to know.
It's an amorphous shape.
We're never going to see it again.
It's a humanoid of some sort, yeah.
But I do believe it to be. So I believe it to be a creature, a physical being.
It's a physical thing.
And I believe it to be of sub but near human intelligence, mainly just because of the staring. It's just
because if you can stare, you're human.
You're human. And that's all I know.
Okay.
Now.
All right. So chalk this up to we don't understand what it could be.
But it is there.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. I think.
It should be the thing of Dover. That should be the
actual
thing.
The Dover thing. What great branding.
That's better than demon.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. It's something. It's a physical real creature that I hope to see one day, but I probably won't. And I actually hope I don't ever see it again. So cool.
You've never seen it, Sam.
In my dreams.
You can't see it again.
Yeah. That's all I got to say about
all
it.
Right,
I think that looking at things like Native American lore and things like it also kind, I mean, it just kind of sounds like a goblin or an imp or something like that.
A small little creature that is. Yeah, but it doesn't do anything malicious.
No. So, not that we know of.
Like, yeah.
That's the thing. We don't know what it's doing.
Sam, look
we
at it.
We don't know it's, anything about
it's
this
skin
guy.
Skin and bone, it can barely lift its darn head up.
I know. We don't know anything about it. It could be doing malicious things. We just don't know because we saw it for, like you said, 15 seconds. That's the thing. We can't tell what it is off of 15 seconds of sightings, you know?
Yeah, I think I just proved my point.
Yeah. No, totally. I agree with you. In that one little area.
Oh, okay. Darn.
I also think that it is an unknown creature.
One battle at a time.
So, all right. Cool.
I think we covered
it. I think we got it.
Anything else that we need to cover? Anything else going on in the world of...
Oh, I'm going to be on a podcast.
Oh, man.
I'm going to be...
Everyone
what?
Everyone likes you.
Well, it's...
Nah, you're good. Yeah, you're going to be on a podcast.
Everybody likes you, too. We'll you're coming on to talk about Trollhunters later.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm going to be that's on... So I'm going to be on in the next few weeks at some point. We're going to be on the Double Density podcast. Remember when I told you about Angelo and it being his birthday?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's Angelo's podcast. It's the Angelo and Brian, and it's the one that they talk about like technology for the first half and the paranormal for the second. That's going to be pretty cool. That's going to be the next few weeks, so subscribe to Double Density. Keep your eyes out for that. Yeah, we got t-shirts.
Nope.
NotAlonePodcast.threadless.com. We got one new patron this week. We want to thank Ray Walden for becoming a patron.
Woo! Yeah, Ray!
Thank you so much for your support, my man. If you want to learn how to support your favorite show, you can go to patreon.com/notalonepodcast. You can get the full unedited cut of the show, usually get it a few days early. For just $3 a month, you can get access to bonus episodes.
Yeah,
for $5
like
a month.
Blithering idiots.
We always sound like blithering idiots. All right. Though. So head over there to find out how to support your favorite show. Again, that's patreon.com/notalonepodcast. And then we also want to thank all of these people who left reviews, which was actually quite a lot. So.
Oh, scary. Dude, this is the most scary thing that I've experienced.
It's good. They're pretty
it's
much
all
the
reviews.
Good.
Oh, no.
So we want to thank B. Russell 47. Thank you, B. Russell 47. We want to thank Ray's Bands 94. Thank you, Ray's Bands. We want to thank Chessick 23. Thank you, Chessick. And we want to thank Pyromaniac Midget. Thank you, Pyromaniac Midget.
And thank you for that name.
And thank you for sparing us from your fiery wrath. We're going to go ahead and read out. We'll do Pyromaniac Midgets.
All right.
They're pretty good. All right. It says, remember, weather, .. So, I found these guys after hearing them on History Goes Bump, and I binged all their episodes over the last week. They are great, and I consider them my neighbors to the north of Utah at least. They crack me up with their jokes, and they deliver lots of awesome stories. Some that I have never heard before in my treks through Podcastville, which is really what we're going for. I want to just tell people all these new stuff that they never heard, so that's cool. Now, when it comes to sciencey stuff, my guess is that they are not scientists, so I either laugh or yell at my phone, which I think is also fair.
That's, yeah. I try, but I don't know.
Yeah. Regardless of this minor criticism, I still love and recommend this podcast to anyone and everyone. So remember, whether you are listening to this podcast while mowing your lawn, or feeding your insomnia with more spooky stories from Sam and Jason, we are not alone. Ah, thank you, Pyromaniac Midget. And thank you for sparing us from your fiery glory.
And thank you, everyone else, as well.
Yes,
of course.
For all
the reviews are great for us.
Yes, we love them. I don't know if they actually do help our iTunes ratings.
No, I mean, like, they're great for us to, like,
yeah,
know whether or not we're doing an okay job.
And to feel good about ourselves. We got, like, 138 reviews at this point. It's dope.
I did read that one that specifically
thank goodness
stated,
for Jason.
Yeah. Because you wouldn't read it out loud. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. It's not that I wouldn't read it out loud. There was just a different one I wanted to read. I have nothing against that.
I think you just have something against me.
You know?
A little bit.
Maybe.
A little bit. Anyway.
Also, yeah. Guys, go to videoblocks.com/notalone. We have, you should have heard, I'm going to create a new advertisement for it because there is a great new offer from them where you actually get access to all of their stuff. So not only videos, but audio, still photos as well. You get access to all of this for what you used to pay for access to one of their services all year. Now, this is a promotional thing, only goes through December. So go to videoblocks.com/notalonepodcast to learn more. And by supporting our sponsors, you are supporting the show in a fantastic way. Who did it last week?
Pretty sure you did.
Did I? Okay.
Almost positive.
All right.
Do
it up, homie. Little homie.
Remember, whether you're cruising down the street with your friends.
Okay.
Or you're having a staring contest with something from another world. We are
not alone.